You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Wow, I don't know what happened. We had a sold out crowd the other day, a new lower.com field. We'll get to our experience here on the Massive Report podcast, but you know, there's 20,000 people there and there's only the most sparsely attended Massive Report podcast that I can remember. And Ori Benatar for being here. I'm Brian Phillips, and that's it. Everyone else is begged out. What happened?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. About? Yeah, and we're back on Zoom for this week. It's a little bit of a different setting this time around. We're not at our usual hangout of Saucy Brewworks, which, as a reminder, is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world, Saucy Brewworks. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Hopefully we'll be there next week. We should be there next week on 443 West 3rd Avenue, eating some food, drinking some beers, talking some crew soccer. But yeah, this time around, I guess that long 4th of July weekend has got people busy, and it's just going to be us talking about these last two games, last game and upcoming game, lower.com field. Unbelievable opener, I have to say.
Sure was. I don't even know where to start. I found my seats in section 107 in the south end, down low behind the goal, or looking around. I was like a kid. It was the stadium wasn't even nearly full. We had like an hour or at least 45 minutes to kick off. And I could just feel the energy. And there was just so much excitement. And I was speechless. I was like, this place is so cool. This is everything that I hoped it would be. And of course, as the evening went along, and the sound of the crowd. Also, I don't know if anybody talked about this, but the lighting is state of the art. It gave the place almost like a film like quality. I don't know. And the lighting is all inside the stadium, and it just made everything just pop. It was visually stunning. And I was pretty moved by the whole thing. I mean, it's so much more than a building already. And you could tell that the players were engulfed in the feeling that they were getting in Nordica, where the sound, I imagine, Alex, it had to be deafening over there, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty loud. Didn't quite know where I was gonna sit. Got to the stadium early. I knew that the first couple of rows were gonna be marked off. I actually got there really early. In fact, I was actually the first one through the Nordica gate to get into the stadium because I just was like, I'm not drinking. I'm just
LDC gonna get, field just, trivia question. First Nordica fan to get through the gate, Alex Stanek.
That was me. Steve Cirque interviewed me as the first fan through. Actually, that was funny. I was like, I told Steve not to videotape me, and then I was first one through, so he videotaped me anyway. But Steve's cool, so I'll let it go.
Yeah, you're part of history. Absolutely.
Yeah, I went down to the front row, and yeah, you could definitely hear the drums and everything, you know, reverberating in a way that they didn't before. You could almost feel it. But section looked great, super loud. I thought the Capos did a great job. It's a different design than the old stadium, so some kinks to work out just with making sure we keep everybody in sync and things like that. But for first game, we were on it. It was great. Can't wait to see things progress, and hope the crowd stay as hungry as they were. It was really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, the whole day was special. You know, we sort of joined the march to the stadium already underway. So we had to wait to get into the parking garage a little bit longer than we thought we were. Bought our parking ahead of time, just a little thing. Other than the wait to get into 300 Neal Avenue, the parking garage there, I felt like that was a pretty good call on our part. It's not a bad walk. And we made it back to the car in time before the rush, and we're able to get out of there. So other than getting, you just have to, I think, arrive a little bit earlier than perhaps you were used to for the old stadium. Because you have many different parking options, whether they be the garages or, you know, the little lots that business owners put up and park 20 cars or whatever. It looked like Betty's was pretty crowded, so I didn't go in. I didn't have time to do the hope to make that happen soon, but I'm glad Betty opened and got a lot of business. Alex, did you go to Betty's? Did it? Bart did.
Betty's was jam-packed. They had people not only inside, but outside as well. I kind of poked my head in. I had heard from some other folks that it was super, super hot in there. Just decided to kind of mosey on down to the stadium. But I saw Betty's. I contemplated going inside of Betty's. But I think everyone, like we had said before, if I had a dollar for everybody who said that they were going to Betty's for that first game, you know, would have been able to fill our old stadium. You know, I skipped out.
Yeah, probably a wise idea, the busy first game. How'd you find the press facilities, Ori?
Good. First time I got to sit in a real press box for a crew game since I started with Massive Report. The only time I sat in a press area at the old stadium was in the build out on the stage because of COVID protocol. So I never actually sat in the old press box, but from what I've heard, this new press box is a gargantuan upgrade from the old press box. And, you know, it's got the levels, you know, we were sitting like right on the edge of the window. The window was open, so you got a feel of the atmosphere. You got a feel of the weather. It was a perfect day for an opener at a new stadium. So the heights and that kind of stuff will take some getting used to for sure. I couldn't see the closest end line towards us, so that's a kink you might have to look over a little bit, but I got to see most of the game. You're pretty close to the players from a media perspective. You know, the media room is very nice. They have bathrooms. They have food, of course. You know, they give us all plenty of bottles of water. So there was a lot of stuff from a media perspective, and we got a sense of the atmosphere, you know, in the press box, especially when the windows are open, because we could really hear everything at its optimum sound. So it was a great experience, you know, as a young journalist, but also as somebody who loves soccer. You know, that's probably the best atmosphere I've been in for a soccer match ever. And relatively speaking, for a sporting event in general. And I wanted to kind of ask you guys, since, you know, you guys have been around Columbus longer, you're older than me, you know, thinking about the biggest, best atmospheres in Columbus sports specifically, you got OSU football, the Blue Jackets, the Clippers, the Crew. Where does that rank among the best atmospheres? I want to hear from you, Brian.
Well, you know, I think of two things. I think of when I was privileged enough to go to the Jackets Boston Bruins series a couple of years ago at Nationwide Arena. This game had that same sort of feel to it, even though it was a regular season game, because of just the people were so excited to be in the facility. The other that I think of is 2001 USA Mexico. Josh Wolf scoring that goal, my wife getting a beer poured on her in 28 degree weather, and just the electricity and the atmosphere that night as well. I put it right up there with those. And I've been to a couple, three OSU football games over the years. And the stadium is so gargantuan that you just sort of don't feel like you're necessarily a part of what's going on way down below. So this, you know, and my wife says, is this place smaller than the old stadium? I go, well, yes and no. I mean, it's just designed differently, but it's basically the same capacity, 20,000. I think of it as, you know, Nationwide Arena without a roof. Size and capacity just has to be a little bigger around to accommodate the soccer field. But I don't know about you, Alex, but I did have that feel that this was a place that you needed to be this past Saturday, and that will never quite, until we win another MLS Cup in lower.com field, it's not going to have that same kind of feel again. It'll be close, but there's something different about this.
Yeah, I think I'll be curious to see what the crowd looks like and what the noise level looks like for a regular game, not in kind of one of these major events, right? I think it's still going to be loud, but I tend to agree with you that I think it's going to drop off maybe a little bit. But that little bit of a drop off is still going to be a major upgrade over what we had. I think, you know, one thing you mentioned is around the stadium design, and I think that's a really good call out. If you were not at the game and have not had a chance to visit the new stadium, you are much, much closer to the pitch than you are in where you would be in Moffray Stadium. And everybody is kind of stacked on top of each other in like a slightly different way. It's very steep and everybody's very close. And so same capacity, but everything is more compact. And then you've got that roof that just keeps that volume in. So it's definitely a great atmosphere. I think, you know, hopefully it'll be pretty intimidating as time goes on. I think some of the traditions and things that they started are pretty cool, and can kind of help build up that atmosphere a little bit before the game, especially with Wise Men. I know we're going to talk about the traditions later, but just in general, I think it's going to be a really, really great place to play a game of soccer, and definitely felt like home. Part of that might be because I spent so much time that previous week there working on the TIFO, but it's already starting to feel like home for me. So yeah, super, super pleased with how everything turned out.
Now, the rigging of the TIFO still needs to be worked on, right?
Yes, it does. So the TIFO was completed. Nordeca put out a statement on game day that they would not be going ahead with the TIFO due to some safety concerns. And I think that was absolutely the right call. The rigging system as it's designed causes the people who are on the ropes to have to lift a pretty tremendous amount of weight. And there are some concerns if something goes wrong about how that weight is distributed on everybody else. Without getting into the specifics on things, there are just some things that they needed to clean up that they didn't have time to clean up. The front office was working with a company, and that company has some work to do, I think, to get things in a position where we can safely deploy the TIFO. But the TIFO was completed. It was not an issue of, you know, they didn't get everything painted in time or anything like that. It was simply the new system that the front office had put together. It wasn't in a spot where we could safely deploy it without risking someone getting injured. So made the right call to prioritize supporter safety over the TV moment, and absolutely the right call. I was very, very uncomfortable when we were testing it, to be perfectly honest with you. So definitely glad I didn't have to do it on game day.
Or we might be doing this podcast
with two people instead of three. So
that'd be
good for me anyway.
You guys got plenty of TV moments, you know, that national anthem with Nordeca, the singing of Wise Men at the beginning. You had, you know, the atmosphere that generated towards stoppage time mainly, but during the goals as well through the ESPN broadcast. So even without the TIFO, Nordeca and the fans had their moments during that game, you know. And that game, along with the opener at Q2 and the opener at TQL, all three stadium openers that just opened the door towards so many possibilities in Major League Soccer heading into its next 25 years.
Yep. Yeah, it was a great night for Nordeca. One of the strongest nights I think we've had in a long time. So, really happy with how everything turned out.
Yeah, as far as Nordeca goes, and we talked about the sound, and I saw some decibel readings that were rivaling, you know, your loudest bands. You know, I think of the late, great Motorhead, the late, great Lemmy. You know, and I was thinking Nordeca is sort of like a guitar player who gets a new, bigger Marshall amp. They plug it in for the first time and they tune it up to 11 and they just wail on that thing, see what it can do, maybe get some effects pedals and really go crazy. And I felt like that bigger area and the way it was designed was sort of like a new instrument that you guys have. And from being in the opposite end of the stadium from you guys, I could feel it. I mean, as I said, I really got the chills, and a lot of it was due to, you know, the cheering and the singing and just the sound and the bad calls and the reaction to that, just all of it. It was so electric and really added to the atmosphere. I mean, you guys are a bigger part of the show now, if you will. And it is a big responsibility. And I know that there's been some learning from it, and it's only going to get better and better and better and better. But it can't help but serve to buoy our guys and hopefully at least distract the opponents to some extent. I know Ori Jossi Zarda said that he felt like a real professional soccer player. And I've never been to a European stadium, but I imagine that a person who lives in England or Germany or wherever would recognize and feel at home in our stadium, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I think you do have to mention. You know, it could be people thinking, oh, it's just these Americans talking up their stadiums for MLS. the lower.com field, all these new stadiums in MLS, these are world-class stadiums. They've learned from the stadiums of Europe. They're taking ideas from, you know, some of the biggest stadiums in the NFL as well. When we took the tour of lower.com field early last week, you know, we had people who help work on the stadium overseas stuff telling us about the sort of things they adopted from, you know, AT&T Stadium in Arlington or SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, these $100 million plus stadiums around the United States, but also learning from Europe with the narrow supporter section, you know, traditions as well that are very European, you know, singing Wise Men Say as the players walk out, very much like You'll Never Walk Alone for Liverpool or Forever Blowing Bubbles for West Ham United. So that stadium is world-class. It's not just best in MLS or, you know, one of the best in the United States. It's a world-class facility for, you know, soccer or football, whatever you want to call it. And the players all felt that. Jossie Zardes, you know, said it, we feel like professional soccer players. Caleb Porter said it was the loudest 20,000 he'd ever heard. And Aloy Room responded to a tweet from a Crew fan saying that was one of the best atmospheres I've been in. And Aloy Room has played, you know, played in Eredivisie in the Netherlands, one of the biggest leagues in Europe. So that stadium is going to be such a game changer for, you know, momentum swings, you know, motivation for the players, adding that extra lift of energy. We saw a glimpse of that in the last game at Crew Stadium because it was a full house for the first time since March 1st of 2020. But now it's basically that amount of people that filled in Crew Stadium, filling in lower.com field with that roof, everything caving in, the sound system coming in, the energy from the fans, the flags waving. It feels like a really big professional soccer stadium. And that is crazy to think that we have this place smack dab in the middle of the capital of Ohio. And it's incredible to see. And it just sets up, you know, decades and decades in the coming years that MLS can continue to grow as a league, these stadiums to continue to turn people into soccer fans. That's one thing Dr. Pete Edwards talked about, having casual Columbus, you know, citizens, people living in the arena district or in downtown, just coming to a Crew game and just enjoying the atmosphere and the buzz around the building, doing something over the weekend. And then that game turns them into a hardcore Crew fan. So this stadium is going to help that. It does make an effect. And I think it will as the weeks, the years, you know, decades go by.
And I just appreciate little things as well in being able to, and I think that at this point, regardless of sport, they figured out ways in which when you go and get a beer or get a broad or whatever, that you feel like you're still watching the game, and there's plenty of open space. Yep. I think of PNC Park in Pittsburgh, the Pirate Stadium, they did such a great job at that place of making sure that your sight lines were always good and everybody's learning from everybody else. And I felt like, you know, I got a broad for my wife and okay, I had to turn my back, but there were like five screens right above. So I felt like I wasn't missing anything. And then you turn around and you're at a concession stand facing towards the field and you feel like you can still see a lot of it. So a lot of thought went into making sure that wherever you are, you're still a part of what's going on. Very easy to get around. The plaza's plenty big. I would maybe put some sort of awning or cover over the stage for the bands. It gets a little hot down there. So maybe put one of those up to make some shade. I'm a big fan of shade. Maybe it's just me. But a little more shade there on the plaza. But otherwise, it looked really cool. I like the steps that you could sit on. Very informal. Plenty of room for food trucks. You know, just those little things. I didn't use the restrooms at all. Didn't have to. Did anyone? That's important. Did you see long lines at the ladies' room? You know, that's always a problem in places. Did you hear from anybody that any of that was a problem? No? Okay, good.
No.
So they got everything right. The exciting stuff and the human stuff that we need, like going to the can. That's good.
Yeah, I think the one thing about the stadium that I might change, the way that they have the opposing players warming up right in front of Nordeca, I think is going to go south at least once at some point. But I was in the front row over there, kind of on the north or on the right side of Nordeca, if you're kind of facing the field. And the players were about 5 feet away from us. Yeah. And it was just a great opportunity to heckle them. And yeah. It didn't go beyond heckling. But I do think against a team that we dislike more, or if one of these players like jawed back at us at anything, it was lighthearted. I mean, I told AJ De La Garza to tell in Emmanuel Boateng to tell his teammates that they suck. And they both like laughed about it. It's like, it was fine. But like at some point somebody's going to throw a beer. Right. So I might move them somewhere else so that,
hey,
a beer is not thrown. Yeah.
We're tough people in the South end. You know, you move them down. God knows what's going to happen in front of the people who have seats, you know, who are sitting.
Put them in front of the sideline casuals. I think they didn't want to put them in front of the sideline casuals because the players significantly impaired the view for those of us in the front row down there. And I think that, you know, we're in the cheap seats over there in Nordeca. So maybe we get what we paid for, but you do that in those front row premium seats on the sideline. And maybe somebody would have some words to say to their season ticket rep. So maybe that's what happened, but somebody's getting hit by a beer at some point. So I'm calling that now.
Well, I hope not.
I will not throw that's it. Not obviously,
I hope not. And hopefully it's not like Gonzalo Higuain or something when Inter Miami comes in like October. That would be bad.
Yes.
Hopefully he's not coming off the bench for them.
Yeah.
We need to behave ourselves. Yeah, there's so much to look forward to. It's so exciting.
Yes.
We'll get to the game itself here in a moment. But I know, Alex, you and I are going to disagree somewhat on the jackhammer, the crew logo come to life. I thought it was really cheesy, but I kind of embraced it for what it was, sort of cartoonish and silly. And I had a good laugh. And, you know, by the second goal, I was like, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get upset about this. If it's meant to be intimidating, that's not going to work. If that's your goal, that's not going to work. But I, you know, when the Portland Timbers lumberjack saws off a piece of log, I think that's silly too. So I take it as kind of a joke, and I think it's something that little kids will think is kind of neat somehow. You know, I don't know. I know you hate it, and I get why you hate it. Is there any way to improve it?
So I don't think so. I'm open. I'm open to people trying, of course. I think that a lot of people in Nordeca are very upset at me for being as vocal as I have been about the jackhammer, and to those people I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry at the same time. I think that what the jackhammer was meant to do, from the conversations that I've had, was that a player on the crew roster finds the chainsaw in Portland to be distracting and also prolongs that feeling of like, oh no, we just conceded a goal, right? It stretches out that time frame where mentally you are thinking about how you just gave up a goal, because the players associate that chainsaw with like, oh, we just messed up, right? And they wanted the crew and Nordeca to come up with something similar. In that regard, I think that the jackhammer completely fails, because the jackhammer, like you said, is kind of kitschy and a little bit cringeworthy and just kind of silly, right? It's not something that makes you feel like you're in, you know, a super intimidating environment. In fact, I think it actually is kind of counterproductive to making you feel like you're in an intimidating environment, because it stops people from chanting and everybody just kind of like looks at this chainsaw and like laughs with their friends about it. Do I think that they can improve it? I think potentially. I think that one thing that's weird about it, the thing that was the weirdest to me about it, let me put it this way, was the fact that the cinder block was like basically pre-cut. And so it was like one of those like little weird.
I mean, if you're going to do it, get a big chunk of rock up with that thing.
Yeah,
I agree.
So I think that some of that might be that it's just not safe to do that. Like you're not providing protective
eyewear to people. You think this guy with a big chainsaw? It's not safe either.
Well, at least it's like one guy. Like I'm worried about like a fan getting hit with like a piece of rock if it broke off weird and like hit a fan in the head or something. But I think in general, the weirdest thing to me was that it was basically Susie just like jackhammering on a piece of metal.
Yeah,
and it was just like, what is this? But the people who kind of proposed the idea within Nordeca, you know, they're super passionate fans. They mean well. They're going to keep working on it. Love all the people who are involved. Didn't do it for me. I don't think it's going to do it for me anytime soon, but it's also not going anywhere. So like, they're going to have a few months to like try to figure it out. But yeah, for me, it was just corny. Loved the march though. I thought that was a really great new tradition. I thought that went really, really well. And loved Wise Men. I thought that went really well. Both of those things universally loved. There was some negative feedback around the jackhammer, not just from me, but from others as well. We'll see what happens with it. But all in all, amazing game either way. So,
well, I guess what I like about the jackhammer is it's a nod to the original logo, which they've tried to run away from for forever. And it's a way to bring that, keep that tradition as we move forward with new logos and a new stadium and so forth. Or past, I think it would be cool. Like the Seattle Seahawks, every home game, they have somebody like a former player or a celebrity or somebody, a hero, raise the 12-man flag. And so perhaps you can have one of the members of the crew logo come to life, be a special guest. That people are surprised to see, you know, a former Buckeye football player, one of the guys from 21 who has a connection to the community, and obviously former players, but you keep it a secret. And then that first goal comes up. Hopefully we don't get scored. That goal is scored. And then, look, it's Tyler from 21 Pilots. He's part of the logo. That, and I think people will really embrace it more if they turn it into something like that, where you're like constantly supporting one of the three members of the crew.
Yeah, so that is what they're planning on doing.
Okay.
So there will be like a celebrity-ish person there all the time. I've got mixed feelings about that. I mean, I understand why they're doing it. I also think it's going to quickly devolve into like, the crew just signed a sponsorship deal with Budweiser. And so there's like some 70-year-old vice president of marketing from Budweiser up there doing the jackhammer thing. But important for the most part, that is their plan.
Yeah. I mean, they got to keep it cool.
Yes.
Can embrace it. Well, we'll see. I didn't get upset about it. I thought it was pretty goofy, but I laughed. If that's what they were going for, then that they achieved that, at least with me.
Yeah, I still want to throw the jackhammer into the Scioto River. Like I still would like to do that at some point. But I think that it's going to stick around for a while. Let's see what happens with it. You know, maybe 6 months from now, I will admit that I was completely wrong about the jackhammer. Time will tell. We'll see how it goes, right?
As to the game itself, no surprise at all that the crew came out guns blazing and tried to get on the front foot, get on the scoreboard first. It didn't work out. I felt like the chances were all good. Just some of it was just bad luck. Where we fell apart was in the back. Vito had a terrible game. The two instances where he didn't close down the same guy with the ball, 17 with the Revolution, his name escapes me.
Buchanan,
who was subbed off in the second half. I was glad to see him go because he caused so many problems. Did they talk about that after the game, Maury? Was there confusion? What was going on?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that Caleb Porter mentioned about the game afterwards was he was very proud of the performance, and he has every right to be. The fact that Columbus dominated New England, especially in the second half, you know, this is the best team in the Eastern Conference, and they really dominated them, I think, for the second half. I think they showed flashes of that dominance in the first half, but personally, I just don't think they really put it together until the second half. But defensively, yes, Vito Wormhoor didn't have his best game, and you're kind of seeing, you know, his lack of pace potentially inhibit some of his defensive abilities, or just in general for chances like that, especially in transition, because New England had the first goal came from the back, Matt Turner with the pass out, and then they just had a good transition play. And then the second goal was basically just a corner kick that they just got a rebound off of and turned it into an easy cross for Gustavo Bo-Tappin. Tejan Buchanan, a really, really good player. He's going to be with Canada for the Gold Cup. So if you want to watch him play more, you know, he'll be with Canada. They're going to play the United States here in the group stage. But Milton Valenzuela also didn't have his strongest game defensively. He was caught out of position a couple of times. He was forced to, you know, attack early on after conceding the first goal. And you saw him sort of, you know, edge into the middle of the field. I think Guillerme wrote that in his game grades, which is on massivereport.com. But then we saw Valenzuela have to come off in, you know, the 45th minute for an injury. And then some people are like, well, move Pedro to left back and put Matan at left wing. But I think in that situation, you're down 2-0. You want to make sure the defense is okay. I think Waylon Francis coming in at left back was the right call from Caleb Porter. So, but to me, the atmosphere of lower.com field really helped the team get into that groove, really helped the team stay dominant in the second half. Getting the goal before halftime was huge. You know, Jassy Zardes, Caleb said it was his best game of the season. It puts himself in really good form heading to the Gold Cup with the United States, assuming he starts. I don't know if he will, but he's definitely going to play. But, you know, he had that great turn and goal. He you know, a lot of the time I don't love seeing Jassy Zardes play with his back to goal. But in that game, he had his two best moves with his back to goal. Back to goal on the first goal, turns left, basically just rolls it past Matt Turner with his left foot. You know, perfect accuracy on a shot that low with not as much speed. And then he had that great chance late in the second half that could have won the game for them with a great turn off a defender, you know, forces the left foot shot. Turner makes a great save. You know, New England defensively with Matt Turner being one of the best keepers in MLS kept them in that game in the second half. Columbus should have walked out of there with the win. And then you could look back at the two chances within the first, 3 minutes? Diaz almost scored in 30 seconds. And then Harrison Afful almost had a Halloween playoff-esque same kind of goal with the little, you know, shimmy dribbling and then missed the shot. It's the lack of, you know, good clinical finishing on the high XG chances that the crew really has to improve on. And again, if they convert those chances, we're talking about 3 points. So, but I think this is a turn the corner moment for the crew because they dominated one of the best teams in MLS in front of their home fans. They know lower.com field is going to be this really significant home field advantage for them going forward this season. That, you know, that atmosphere alone is going to help energize the team towards wins, towards points. When we get to the point where playoffs are getting closer, decision day is going to be at home against Chicago on November 7th. So the atmosphere really helped them. They played a good game, but clinical chances. They've scored 11 goals this season. 4 have been from Jassy Zardes. 3 have been Lucas De La Rayon free kicks. 1 breakaway from Luis Diaz. And now 3 own goals, with the last one being a complete and utter fluky McFluke fluke.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question. I was glad to have it. I was. And that flurry at the end. I mean, really, if you were just a fan, didn't have a rooting interest in the game, entertained for 90 minutes. I mean, it was really a good game and something that Don Garber can point to and go, yeah, that's what this game of MLS can be. I mean, high drama. The flurry at the end was just hearts.
I don't know how they didn't score. Caleb Porter's like,
ball not gonna win.
Yeah, Caleb Porter's like, I don't know how we didn't score there. I literally don't know how we scored. He said that to us a few times. So, you know, they get those 3 shots, but New England defensively really rebounded. Farrell specifically, who had the ball come off of his head off the Frazier pass that led to the own goal. You know, where Jassy Zardes basically just smashes himself into 2 guys. He didn't push them. It was a legal goal. It wasn't a foul. Zardes was saying how the defenders were like, oh, they were saying that I pushed them. And I don't know. I didn't push them.
No.
So
he had every that was their screw up. You
completely.
Know?
And
so they got to own it.
Yeah. And they got the point.
Happen.
Yeah. And they get another point against the best team in the Eastern Conference. It's big.
And the standings are just so compact in the East. 4 teams level on 16 points, including the crew. And then New York City just a point ahead. Nashville 2 points ahead. The Union 3. And, of course, you have New England with 24 points. Orlando with 21. And we'll talk about FC Cincinnati, who are actually sort of kind of lurching to some kind of not the worst team in the Eastern Conference right now. They're not in the top half. They're getting there. We play them on Friday at 7:30. But before we get to that, do we want to anything else from Saturday, the floor is open. There's only three of us. Anything else strike you about the game or about the atmosphere that we haven't brought up yet that's important? Hold on.
Alex,
just to echo.
We covered
everything. To echo. Yeah, just to echo what Ori said about Vito. I thought he was better in the second half. I mean, if there's any silver lining, I thought he was better in the second half. Couldn't have been much worse, though. I mean, that was like some of the worst man marking I think I've ever seen from a player in a Crew jersey. The one thing I will say, though, is like I remember a bunch of people in the early games from Jonathan Mensah also said, you know, oh, this guy's, you know, never going to be anything. You know, he's not adjusting. Let's, you know, cut ties and run kind of thing. And Mensah's now, you know, arguably the best defender that we've had since Chad Marshall, maybe second or third best defender who's ever put on a Crew jersey. You know, I think you could actually make a case that he's better than Chad Marshall in some ways. You know, we'll see what happens with Vito. He might turn it around. But overall, amazing, amazing game. If every game is like this, I think we're in great shape. Even if it's every game 75% of what we saw, I think we're in good shape. But the one last thing I would just like to say is, you know, this is kind of that final conclusion of Save the Crew, right? Yeah. You know, we opened this $250 million stadium. Team's not going anywhere. Major League Soccer stuck with us. We're stuck with Major League Soccer. So let's make the best of it, win a bunch of trophies and have fun.
Yeah, and have fun. And to your point, and I know casual fans are not, or people that have never been to a Crew game are not going to listen to this, but those of you that are intense and want to make sure that the team has support going forward, this is a good chance for you to be an evangelist. And you can reach people, so to speak, on the level, as I believe you mentioned, Alex, that for the people that live in that neighborhood and the same folks that might go, hey, there's a ball game. Let's go to the Clippers game. Let's go have a few beers. Let's just enjoy the evening. And, you know, they could care less about baseball. There's something in there for people who've never been to a soccer game before in their lives. There's the atmosphere. There's the band out front. There's the bars. Being there with your friends. There are so many different levels to enjoy this that perhaps we didn't have before. And I think that we get them in the door and pretty soon that they're sort of consumed with this Crew religion and they start to kind of get it and they want to know more. And they went, well, how do I find out what I'm supposed to sing? You know, here, and I want to be a part of this. So it's a great opportunity to grow, gain some new fans, and the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned, because we want that place to be full. When it's full, you know, that I'll bet on us every game when that place is full, and the players notice it, and the fans appreciate that the players notice it, and that it's an important part of their experience. It's not just a job, that they understand that they're representing the city. They represent the city, and hell is real. Down in Cincinnati, our first visit to their new, what's their new stadium called? I forget.
TQL Stadium. So basically. TQL. So basically, if you had a Mad Lib and it said just put three consonants next to each other.
What does that stand for?
TQL is a company. I will find out what they do. You know, right. Me as a very
sanitation.
Old, let's find
sanitation.
Out. TQL.
Yeah, they pick up the trash. Now that would be wrong. So that's not.
They do logistics. Is that freight brokerage?
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, they're founded in Cincinnati.
Like total quality logistics. Yeah, freight brokerage firm. Yep.
They're paying the tab for the naming rights, so it's their deal. Alex, fans are going down. There will be a section for us, will there not?
Yeah, I've got tickets there. Looking forward.
Oh, you
to
do.
It.
All right. Mm-hmm. Did they gouge you like Austin was doing?
No. They were reasonably priced and available very, very briefly through Nordeca. I think they sold out in less than an hour if you were a Nordeca member. Although there is, if you're listening to this tomorrow, there is a raffle or a lottery system for some additional tickets that Nordeca recently obtained. So not sure when that lottery closes. They may still be available. So check the Nordeca social media channels for more information there. If you would like to get tickets.
Will there be buses going down?
I don't believe that they are doing buses. I think it's kind of drive yourself down. But ample street parking is available based on my previous visits. So you might have to walk a little bit, but you can definitely find parking not too far from the stadium, and it's pretty easy.
You know, I feel like I've been to Cincinnati a bunch of times, used to go down there for my daughter's soccer tournaments, but I feel like wherever I'm in Cincinnati, I don't ever know where I am in relation to anything else, unless I'm like at the Reds ballpark or something. In relation to the Red Stadium, the Bengals Stadium, how far is the soccer stadium and what part of the city is it?
So I should take back my statement about street parking being available, because I was thinking about Nippert and I'm thinking about this new place. Yeah. I have no idea where this is. Let me see where this
is. It's in the West End neighborhood, but yeah, relative to Great American Ballpark and Paul Brown Stadium. Mm-hmm. We can look here at a map of Cincinnati here on the side. This is great radio, of course.
Yes.
So if we go to like directions,
I'm just curious about these things.
Yeah. Directions from TQL to Great American Ballpark. It is an 8-minute drive. So TQL is basically north of Great American. It's not on the Ohio, like the Ohio River coastline, like Great American is, but it's pretty much in downtown, of course, in the West End neighborhood of Cincinnati. So it's the zoo is north of it. So if you want to go down 75 or 71, go to the zoo for the game, you could do that. University of Cincinnati is north of TQL, which is obviously where Nippert Stadium is. So
yeah. But so it's not like Philadelphia where it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It's not, it's not like they're playing in, let me just find some random little place next to Cincinnati. It's not like it's in Hamilton or in like, Lebanon or Loveland. It's in downtown Cincinnati. It's right in the thick of it. It's in the West End neighborhood. It's apparently a beautiful stadium and a great place to open this rivalry again.
Alex, what is it like to go to a game at Cincinnati? Are the fans hostile towards Crew supporters? What's the feel that you get when you go?
They're depressed. They hate their lives. They want a team that is a functioning Major League Soccer club, and they don't have one, so they're just kind of like moping around sad. They leave early from games because they see the writing on the wall and they want to beat the traffic. I think that pretty much covers it. Brian, back to you.
They've gotten some results lately already.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a fair assessment, but FC Cincinnati is not the most depressing franchise. Who would have thought in July of 2021 that FC Cincinnati would be less depressing than Toronto FC?
Yeah, Chris Toronto Armas FC, getting the gas.
Chris Armas got fired. Toronto just lost 7-1 to DC United. They have their last place in the East. Yeah, 7-1.
Could not believe when I saw that.
Germany, Brazil.
Like, this has to be a misprint. That's unbelievable. It's not like DC is that good.
No, DC's actually getting good. DC's actually getting really good.
All right, well, they're coming along, but still, you shouldn't lose to anyone to 7-1.
No, never.
Good Lord. And Cincinnati beats them 2-0. They draw over the weekend with Houston, 1-1. So they're kind of feeling their oats here a little bit with 11 points. What have they changed over last season, Rory? What makes them different or better, if in fact they are better?
They signed better players. I mean, it's a simple calculus for this one. They just signed better players, signing Brenner as a striker while he hasn't really produced the goals. He's someone that can potentially step up and give you some goals. They've got Luciano Acosta as an attacking midfielder who's been a huge addition for them. He has really helped that team out. And then Jeff Cameron as a center back. They needed defense. They got defense. Jeff Cameron, a seasoned, experienced center back for the U.S. men's national team in MLS and in the Premier League with Stoke City. So, and then Alvaro Barriel has come up and been a really good goal scorer for them. Joe Zhao, an impressive fullback. Ronald Matriza from New York City is a very good player as well. Someone who, has a real sort of like little rivalry with Derek Etienne. If you recall those NYCFC games against the Crew last year, him and Etienne were going at it. And Matriza, very physical sort of, mind game type of player. But at the same time, Cincinnati, Jaap Stam is starting to figure out a little bit the tactics. They're not just a full park the bus team as much as they were before. They scored 12 goals all of last year. They've already got 10 goals this year through 10 games, three wins, two draws, five losses. But an interesting statistic here. Since they've opened their new stadium, they've lost all three games at their new stadium, and they haven't lost on the road. They've won three on the road and drawn. So this the day that they finally get that big home win? I don't know, because their home losses at TQL are against Inter Miami, New England, and Colorado. But in general, the team is better coached. They're starting to figure out their tactics a little more. They have guys that can, you know, affect the game offensively more. They have more reliable players in the back. It's just a better team. They're still not that good. They're decent. I mean, they're right. They're in the playoff run. They're only 5 points back of the Red Bulls with a game in hand, a seventh place, but obviously early days. But, you know, as the years go by with Brenner and Acosta, if they can keep those, maybe sign some new players as well, you know, they can develop into a really, really, you know, solid outfit at MLS. And I know that would be really good for the Hell Is Real rivalry. It'd be good for probably, you know, the interest in the league potentially, especially in Ohio. You got these two new stadiums, two good teams in Ohio. I know Alex is shaking his head no, but if FC Cincy was decent with the crew being good, it would be really exciting stuff. Whereas compared to last year, four Hell Is Real derbies in 2020, crew won two of them. Cincy did get their first win in the last game at Nippert, and then a draw 0-0 also at Nippert. Wait, Alex, what do you got to say to my point?
So this is like where fans have to jump in and tell journalists to like calm down, right? Because you're thinking that like a competitive rivalry is what fans want. And what I want is to beat FC Cincinnati 24-0 every game until I die.
Neutrals, not crew fans.
That's kind of what I think a neutral would enjoy. 24-0. Personally, I would enjoy that as a neutral myself.
24-0, yeah.
I'm just saying that I haven't been super impressed with them. I haven't been super impressed with the crew on the road. So like, that's an interesting wrinkle to things, I suppose. But I don't think that FC Cincinnati are anything. I mean, they have maybe picked the dirt up out of like the mud and have, you know, set the bar 3 inches above the ground. Right. And so, you know, they're raising the bar a little bit, but they're not anything special, I don't believe.
No,
so.
not we'll right now. But as the years go by, they can develop into something special. I just think they need the time to figure out their tactics, find the right fit, maybe with a new man. I mean, who knows if Jaap Stam is the answer for them to turn into an MLS playoff team. We don't know if he is. We don't know if he isn't. But I don't expect Cincinnati could completely fall off the table. Personally, I just think the quality on the pitch and the depth that they have a little more can help them just stay within floating distance of the playoff standings. But when we get to August or September, maybe they'll start to drop off with the fact that now DC is a potential playoff contender. You got Montreal in the mix as well. Nobody thought either of those two teams were really going to be in the thick of it. So who knows though, but we can't say Cincinnati's the worst team in the East. They're better than Toronto. They're better than Miami. And I would say they're probably on par or slightly better than Chicago.
Yeah, if they get another manager, I hope they do some more vetting than they did two times ago, because their record of picking them has been not so great. They either get like a garbage coach, or they get a racist coach, or they get somebody who's garbage and racist. So
honestly,
hopefully they,
if they hired another manager, I bet you it would be Frank DeBoer.
That would be such a disaster. I hope they do that. He's terrible.
he's had four jobs as a manager, and he's been fired from all four jobs, which is sad, but he's not cut it out as a coach. So maybe they continue to go the Dutch route because of the orange, who knows. So yeah. But Friday should be a fun game. You know, another Hell Is Real game at a completely different stadium. I think this will be the fourth different venue for a Hell Is Real game.
Yeah.
And well, it's walking distance of their home turf in Cincinnati, or in Kentucky. So you can just go right across the river to where all their fans live. So it's great.
Well, Alex, your snide comments about Cincinnati notwithstanding, I'm really worried about this game because we're short-handed, Ori. Who's here? Who's gone? Who's injured? What sort of starting 11 can we expect?
Yeah, I mean, now you start to get into a little bit of a complex lineup situation, and I'm really looking at the fact that at the very back and the very front of the team, you're missing your starters. Aloy Room is gone. He's going to be with Curaçao for the Gold Cup, so he's at the very least missing two games, and Curaçao has an okay chance of getting out of their Gold Cup group. They're with Mexico, El Salvador, and now Kevin Molino's Trinidad. They want a shootout on Tuesday night. So Curacao, I would say, has a legitimate chance to get out of the group and Aloy room to be gone for longer. But to me, the biggest loss is Jossie Zardes. You lose your top goal scorer. You lose your starting striker. He'll be with the U.S. men's national team, who you would expect to make a run at the final in the championship of the Gold Cup this summer, which means he'd basically be gone for the entire month of July. And there's five more games this month. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, the lack of, you know, different sources of goals. So without Jossie Zardes, who starts at striker? Bradley Wright Phillips is still injured. He's probably not going to be fully fit for Friday's game. Maybe that changes. We'll find out on Wednesday when Caleb Porter speaks to the media at the Ohio Health Performance Center. But they did recall Miguel Berry from loan. He was on the bench against the Revolution, so he might have to start at striker. But other than that, you know, that's really the biggest question, is who's going to be starting up top. Liam Fraser is also going to be gone as a central midfield option. He's obviously played a lot recently with Artur being injured, and Artur might be out for a little bit longer. He's probably got a couple more weeks with his injury. But you would probably expect Perry Kitchen to be back to start in center mid. Kevin Molino is now going to be gone for longer, and Derek Etienne could be gone for longer too. At the time of recording this, we'll know whether or not Haiti advances, which they would play with the United States and Canada in the group stage. So there's a lot of guys gone. So Evan Bush is going to be the goalie. So get used to Evan Bush in goal for the Columbus Crew. Did get a clean sheet in his lone appearance for the Black and Gold. He's going to be the starter now. And then at striker, it might be Miguel Berry. Miguel Berry might start Hell is Real on Friday. That is a very high possibility if Bradley Wright Phillips is not fully fit.
It's going to make it funnier when we beat them. It's only going to make it funnier when we beat them. It's going to be great.
Evan Bush is the least of my worries. He's fine. I don't think there's a big drop off there, but obviously, well, it's, you know, it's an opportunity.
Right.
Miguel Berry has an opportunity to make a name for himself. It's go time. And who knows? Who knows? Maybe he's an answer, or at least another answer. We can spread the goal scoring around a little bit. It would have been nice the other day, and we didn't really mention it, but you know, New England gave Lucas a few opportunities from his sweet spot, and he really had a bad game from there. So that's another thing. You know, if it gets a little chippy, Cincinnati is in the wrong spot, who knows? You know, maybe we can score off of that. The corner kicks remain an issue. We just can't seem to get anything going on.
Yeah, it's just the set pieces in terms of set plays has just not been an area the Crew have really excelled in. You know, their one corner kick goal was against Real Esteli, who, again, every B team in MLS is beating Real Esteli. Yeah. So it's not a very impressive corner kick goal to score. But there's a lot of far post runs. It doesn't really work out well. But, you know, even without Molino and Etienne on the wing, you know, you can expect Pedro Santos out there. We'll have to see what the health of Milton Valenzuela looks like. If he's not healthy for Friday, then you're probably looking at Waylon Francis or Pedro Santos to start at left back. I would assume Francis will get the nod, so Santos can play the wing. And then the other winger, you're probably looking at Diaz. I'd like to see Matan get more of a looking. I think you're starting to see a little more confidence in him. You saw him kind of stand up to a dude that was like more than a foot taller than him in the game at lower.com field on Saturday. And he almost scored, I think, once or twice at the end of that game. So I'd like to see him play a little bit more. So Caleb Porter mentioned that this month in July is going to be a grind. It's really going to be tough with all these guys out, and you can expect a few, you know, players here and there that are going to be leaving during the fall for World Cup qualifiers. But obviously that's only for about a week and a half or 2 weeks. So you might be missing a game or two, but for someone like Jossie Zardes playing for the favorites or one of the favorites to win the Gold Cup, I reckon it's the United States or Mexico that wins that tournament. Like it always is. He's gone for the entire month, and he's your top goal scorer. He was the only healthy striker on the roster before Miguel Berry got recalled on from the USL side, San Diego on loan. So that's really going to be the question mark is, you know, can somebody score up top, or will we see someone like Lucas or Matan or Diaz or Pedro really step up and start to contribute from a goal scoring perspective?
And I saw a tweet the other day that amused me greatly, Alex. Someone exhorted the Crew to sign Kai Kamara to fill our. Is he out of a team again?
He's a free agent now, I'm pretty sure.
That's the most absurd idea I've ever seen. But I don't know. It might come to that.
That would be nuts if Kai Kamara came back. That would be kind of insane.
Yeah. Not kind of. It would be really
insane. It would be really insane. I mean, who knows? Maybe they do sign a striker. The window closes here, I think, in a week or two for MLS. I don't know if they go the route of signing a striker. Maybe they might just start Barry for that game or two. But I mean, we wouldn't be having this conversation if Wright Phillips was healthy. If Wright Phillips is healthy, he's starting for Zardes. That's an easy replacement, and you feel a little more confident with him up top. Because
what is his injury? I don't think I saw what it was. What is his
injury? I can go and conduct a little research on my massive report, How to Watch It, which
we recorded. While you're doing that, Alex, you didn't really comment on the idea that Kai Kamara could make his triumphant return. Would that be something you'd be in favor of?
I'd rather sign some retired player. Like, what's Brian McBride doing next weekend, right?
I'd be in favor of that.
Dante Washington.
Yeah, walked Dante. By him at the final game at the old place. He looked great.
Built like a
brick wall, ready to go.
I would take Dante on a short term deal for sure.
Sure.
Right thigh injury, by the way, to BWP.
He's already getting a paycheck from the crew, so HR is probably like pretty easy to work with, right? They could just like give him a bonus. Sure. Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sign Dante. Forget Kai.
Is he now like 45?
Young enough to score against Cincinnati. That's fine.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, let's make our picks and get out of here as we kind of a weird Friday game at 7:30. So one less day of recovery and somewhat shorthand going down to Cincinnati for the first Hell is Real in the new TQL. Did I get that right?
TQL. Yep.
Cincinnati. And we'll see how that all goes. Ori, you want to make a pick?
Sure. And it's kind of interesting because this game was actually supposed to happen on a Wednesday night, you know, a weeknight Hell is Real derby in Cincy's new stadium. They changed it to a Friday night, which was, I think, a better scheduling time. And in fact, all the MLS games are happening midweek. There's not going to be any MLS action this weekend. The league might be playing into the hands of, well, I don't know if we want to play games when there's a Copa America final and a Euro final and Gold Cup starting that weekend. So we're going to have them play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week. And since East Columbus is the final game of that midweek MLS action for this first full week of July. And I hate to say it, I'm going to pick Cincy 1-0 because I think this will be the game where the home fans, the same way that the crew fans helped to energize the crew players in the lower.com field opener against a better side in the Revolution, helped to bring their energy levels up to get that 2-2 draw for a comeback. I think the same happens at TQL, and I'm going outside the box and saying Cincinnati wins 1-0.
Stunning. Well, Alex just choked on his General So's tofu. But
he's
rebuttal,
on a,
Alex?
He's. Or he's on a Cincy podcast right after this, and he's just trying to win some friends on this other show.
If I'm gonna make legitimate soccer reasons for it, I think the fact that the crew don't have Jossie Zardes and don't have a bona fide striker for this game is really going to hurt them. And at the same time,
Cincinnati haven't had a bona fide striker in their entire history of their team.
But they've got people that can help create four sets. You know, Brenner is okay. He's fine. He's got more goals than Miguel Barry and Bradley Wright Phillips this year.
All right, Alex, a rebuttal with your score pick.
It's going to be a 2-1 crew victory. Since he's going to score first, their fans are going to go crazy. We're going to equalize and we're going to quickly get a second and their fans are going to be leaving by the 78th minute. So that's my prediction. They're going to be leaving that beautiful brand new stadium, beating the traffic as they always do. Josh Williams.
I'm going to say the crew will struggle to score, but manage a Miguel Barry stoppage time goal and a 1-0 victory in Cincinnati. How about that? Not as crazy as some of my picks.
That would be huge. That would make Miguel Barry a folklore story.
I don't know. I have a feeling about this and I base it on nothing. It's just like, it seems like this is a good time for something like this to happen. So
He starts. I mean, we have to see if he even starts, but I would assume he
starts. Okay, how about this? 1-0 and Kai Kamara scores.
Kai Kamara. They sign Kai Kamara on Thursday night. He drives up to Cincy by himself. and he scores the winner in the Hell Is Real Derby.
There you go.
That's more. That's very plausible.
And then on Monday, we release him.
Wow.
He plays another minute of professional soccer anywhere.
Oh, my God.
He scores the winning goal for the Crew. How about that? I like it. That's my prediction. Forget about the Miguel Berry thing. Kai Kamara will score the winning goal for the Crew on Friday night.
Or Miguel.
Well, I'm Brian Phillips. I'm not on any sort of foreign substance. Well, I'm having a cold beer. But other than that, I'm not under any foreign substances. It's just sort of a crazy idea I have. Alex, I like your pick. Ori, I don't know. I don't know about that. A lot of other teams, I would say, yeah, you probably got a point there. But I'm just that Cincinnati can compete with us. Until I see it, really? They beat them last time.
They beat them last time. Yeah, yes, the Crew played terribly that game, and that was in October of 2020. But they got one on Columbus. Oh, you know, if the Cincy didn't win that last game, maybe. But I don't know. I think, you know, that home field advantage is going to help them, especially with the Crew just not having Jossie Zardes on the team.
Brian, I think we're going to have to talk to Ori after the show about you know, maintaining the morale around here. And, you know, it's just I don't like that pick, man. I don't like that pick.
Fine.
Well, he's a professional. He's a professional.
I know, man. These gosh darn professionals hate it.
Yeah. I had to play the role for Pat since he's not here and play the part of two journalists. So that was my contribution.
Sober-minded judge of all.
And if I'm wrong, then that makes you guys happy. Yeah. And that's fine. I'm willing to sacrifice my happiness to make a bad pick and be wrong, and then the Crew win, and then I don't get kicked off the podcast, and I can come back to some Crew Works next week.
No, we love you.
You will never be kicked off the podcast.
We love you. All right. So, Ori, Crew Works copy one more time, and hopefully we'll be back there together with beer in hand next week.
Yeah, make sure to go to Saucy Brewworks, guys. Make sure to meet us over there probably next week, early in the week. It is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Go to Saucy Brewworks, because if your brew works, then you should just be saucy with it. Why not? It's on 443 West 3rd Avenue. Check them out. Get some beer. Get some food. The food's really good. I like it a lot.
And they're at, 3rd and Michigan?
Yeah, 3rd and Michigan.
The name of the neighborhood escapes me. Harrison West. Thank you.
There you go.
And not far from the Olentangy Road campus and so forth. It's really a great location. Great neighborhood bar, and we've enjoyed our time there. Hopefully, we'll be back there next week. Like and subscribe to the Bass Report podcast. For Ori, for Alex, my name is Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD92.9. I would appreciate. And we'll live or on Zoom next week. Massive Report Podcast. Thanks for listening.